It is good to see everyone this morning. We have a good crowd today, and we're so grateful for your being here. It is always good to gather together to worship the Lord, and I'm just thankful that we're able to do that, and I expect that as the next few weeks pass, that we will see more and more restrictions lifted and more access to being able to gather together in safety and enjoying times like this as opportunities present themselves. I know that many of you have already read the bulletin. You've seen on the Facebook post that our brother Ron Clayton passed away on Wednesday, sometime during the night, Tuesday night, Wednesday morning. His funeral will be tomorrow at the Hamilton Church of Christ. And if you'll note on Facebook, on my Facebook page and the church Facebook page, there are links that you can click to watch the funeral service tomorrow at 11 o'clock at Hamilton. It'll be on their church Facebook page. It'll be on both Facebook and YouTube, so you can watch that. If you miss it tomorrow at 11, you can watch it later because it will be archived on their site. This will be a tough funeral for me to do. I am not looking forward to it. Ron was my bud, my pal, my mentor, my boss, my friend, and it's going to be tough. So I need your prayers in this way. It's going to also be hard on Sister Karen. She and he had been married for many years, more than I can, I don't even remember exactly the number of years that they were married, but a lot of years, and they depended on each other. She especially depended on him, and this is going to be a very difficult thing. I appreciate so much Brother Richard's prayer this morning, and I know how difficult it was to offer that prayer, and our heart goes out to him in his grief, and to everyone who's suffering right now, to everyone who's grieving over a loved one that has recently passed. If you'll recall, Ron and Karen lost their son Greg, their middle son, just after Thanksgiving last year. He was able to come home and be with them and made some reconciliation. There had been some estrangement, and he had made reconciliation, and all was well. But then he passed rather suddenly. It was expected. He was terminal, but he passed sooner than anybody thought, just shortly after Thanksgiving. So this family has had to endure a lot in the past 6 months or so, and so we need to continue to pray for them. In the work, I'm amazed at how many people have reached out from across the country and around the world to express their sympathy during this time. Open your Bibles to Matthew chapter 20, verses 20 through 28. This will be our text this morning. You were given a song sheet. We're going to sing the first verse only of this song. Many of you know this song. Some of you obviously will not know it, but I want you to keep this because this song is powerful, a powerful message about being a servant of God and the attitude that we need to have. And that, in fact, is the title of my sermon, Make Me a Servant. But in Matthew chapter 20, verses 20 through 28, then the mother of Zebedee's sons came to him with her sons, kneeling down and asking something from him. And he said to her, "What do you wish?" And she said to him, "Grant that these two sons of mine may sit, one on your right hand and the other on your left, in your kingdom." But Jesus answered and said, "You do not know what you ask. Are you able to drink the cup that I'm about to drink and be baptized with the baptism that I am baptized with?" And they said to him, "We are able." So he said to them, "You will indeed drink my cup and be baptized with the baptism that I'm baptized with. But to sit on my right hand and on my left hand is not mine to give, but it is for those for whom it is prepared by my Father." And, excuse me. And when the 10 heard it, they were greatly displeased with the two brothers. But Jesus called them to himself and said, "You know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and those who are great exercise authority over them. Yet it shall not be so among you, but whoever desires to become great among you, let him be your servant. And whoever desires to be first among you, let him be your slave. just as the Son of Man did not come to serve, to be served, but to serve, and to give his life a ransom for many. What does it mean to be a servant? To be a servant, one must have the attitude of a servant. He has to know what he has to do in order to serve, and then simply he has to serve. Let's sing the first verse of this song. Make me a servant, Lord, make me like you. For you are a servant, make me one too. Make me a servant, do what you must do. To make me a servant, make me like you. Mrs. Zebedee came to Jesus and said, I've got a favor to ask. My boys, I want them to have a great honor. They're good boys. I'd like for them to sit one on your right and one on your left. It's up to you. You pick. You decide. And Jesus, you know, and here's the thing. They probably had it in mind a physical kingdom where Jesus would be the king sitting on David's throne in Jerusalem. And so here they are as two of the two highest ranking advisors to Jesus, one on the right and one on the left, at the throne in Jerusalem. Well, you know, you can't blame a mama for asking, right? Mamas want the best for their children. That's understandable. But Jesus says to them, you don't know what you're asking for. Can you handle drinking the cup that I'm going to have to drink? Now, they didn't know what that cup was, but Jesus did. Jesus knew what cup he was. Can you handle that? Oh, yeah, we can handle that. Can you handle being baptized with the baptism that I'm going to be baptized with? They had no idea. No idea at all. Yeah, we can do that. That's like when somebody, you know, you say, hey, can you handle this particular task? And they have no idea what's involved. Yeah, no problem. I can do it. What do I have to do? No idea. They had no concept of the suffering that Jesus would endure, of the agony of the cross, of the rejection by his Father, of the weight of sin, the sin of the world being cast upon the sinless shoulders of the Son of God. They had no concept of what was going to happen. But then Jesus said to them, okay, you know what? You will drink of the cup that I will drink of. You will be baptized with the baptism that I'm baptized with. That's going to happen. But as far as being able to give this that your mother's asking, that's not mine to give. My Father will decide who sits in this place of honor. But then the other 10 disciples, they are so upset about this. They heard them asking for this favor, and they were so angry and so frustrated. And so Jesus said, boys, all right, come here. We got to stop this right now. Gather around. Now listen, you know how it is with the Gentiles. You know how it is about those that rule over and those that are ruled over, and they're then the ones that rule over them, and you know how that goes. Well, that's not the way it's going to be with you. If you want to truly be great, you figure out how to serve your brother. You figure out what you need to do to be a servant, to be a slave to your brother. And it's just like the Son of Man. I did not come to be served. I came to serve, to give my life a ransom for many. Our prayer should be, Lord, make me a servant. Just like the song we sang. That is a prayer, by the way. That song is a prayer. And I really challenge you to read every word of this song. It's a beautiful message about the heart of a servant. And that's really what we're talking about. To be a servant, what is necessary? You got to have the right heart, the right attitude, the attitude of a servant. And perhaps, I mean, I'm going to say it's possible that this is the biggest problem that people have today. The biggest problem that people have in actually being servants is having the attitude of a servant, having that heart of a servant. We live in a country that does not seek to serve others. We live in a country that seeks good service. We pay for good service. We should get good service. You go to a restaurant. I have been in restaurants with people. I will say nobody on this row, okay? I want to not be in trouble, okay? But I have been in restaurants with people, and I'll honestly say nobody in this audience, nobody here today, that embarrassed me to no end by the way they were just so angry and so condescending to the wait staff because they didn't get what they asked for. It didn't come out right, or it took too long, or it wasn't hot enough, or the flavor wasn't right, or, you know, it's just something. Something went wrong. They forgot some part of the order, and they're just so upset and so frustrated and just basically gave that poor waiter a dressing down right there in front of everybody. And it's just embarrassing. That's not the heart of a servant. That's the heart of a Lord. That's the heart of one of these Gentile authorities that Jesus said. And he said, it will not be so among you. Somebody says, hey, but that's their job. They work for this company. They're doing this. That's what they're supposed to. Okay, fine. They are supposed to serve. How many of you have done food service industry? How many of you have worked in that area? Some of you have. Let me tell you, you know what I'm talking about. The struggles, the frustrations that these poor souls go through, it is, and they have to smile, and the customer's always right, and it's just, it's so hard. So if you say it's their job, but you've never done that kind of work, you need to be quiet. Because you don't know what you ask. Are you able to drink the cup, Jesus says? Are you able to be? I don't think you know what you're asking for, but yeah, you're going to drink that. People who are rude and disrespectful to others are guilty of having a serve me attitude. And that's not what Jesus told us to do. You know, we have a difficult time in our culture understanding what it means to have this attitude of a servant. And so the attitude plays such an important role here. And a lot of times, we're like two brothers that were fighting over pancakes. You heard about the boys, the two boys that were fighting, the brothers fighting over the pancakes? Mama had fixed two pancakes. Now, she had more she was cooking on the griddle, but she had fixed two pancakes, and one of them was bigger than the other one. So she had two pancakes on the platter, and the boys, you know, she told them, go ahead. They'd said the blessing. Go ahead and get you a pancake and eat. And the two brothers, both of them wanted the big pancake. I don't blame them. Big pancakes are better than little pancakes, aren't they? Because you get more, right? So there they are. They're arguing over this. And so Mama just, you know, they're bickering. And so Mama came over and said, all right, wait. Just stop, boys. Now, what would Jesus do about this pancake if he were sitting here? Wouldn't he let his brother have it? And they both kind of hung their heads, you know. And then the younger one spoke up and said to his little brother, I mean to his big brother, okay, you be Jesus. You be Jesus. We have this serve me attitude. I come first, you know. I'll be humble as long as it doesn't cost me. I'll say I'm a servant as long as it doesn't cost me too much. So, you know, we need to be careful about this attitude of serve me. Rather, we need to develop an attitude of let me serve. So how do we do that? Well, first of all, you consider others before you consider yourself. You don't think, we have had fellowship meals back here, and we have had folks that were here, not members here now, but folks that were here that were about as uncouth as two dogs, two puppies that wait for one another to eat. Have you ever seen a puppy wait on another puppy to eat? Have you ever seen that? Shake your head this way because you have never seen that. When two puppies are going after the food, it is a race, and they're not one waiting on the other. So here we were, you know, back here, and I've seen people. And man, I mean, it's almost they shove somebody out of the way and get up there, and there's eight pieces of chicken on this platter, and they'll get four of them. Yeah, that's not a servant attitude, and that's not considering others before yourself. Philippians 2, verse 3 and 4, let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit, but in lowliness of mind let each esteem others better than himself. Let each of you look not only for his own interests, but also for the interests of others. Now, Paul is not forbidding you to be concerned about your own needs. He's not telling you, don't you even give any thought to your needs. You just only be focused on what everybody else needs. It's not what he's saying at all. He's saying, but consider others before yourself. Don't just think of your own needs, but think about the needs of others. Romans 15, verses 1 through 3. We then that are strong ought to bear with the weak. Bear with the scruples of the weak, the New King James says, and not to please ourselves. Let each of us please his neighbor for his good, leading to edification, building up his spiritual life. For even Christ did not please himself, but as it is written, the reproaches of those who reproached you fell on me. That's what Jesus is saying he did. So consider others before yourself. And when you're considering, when we're considering ourselves, we need to count ourselves unworthy of honor. No, I don't deserve this. That's the attitude of you know, humility. Humility is so important. Y'all know that Henry won the most humble man in Limestone County last year, but they took the award back because he accepted it. And so this is a, you know, he didn't get to keep it. Well, he's coming after me for that, I know. The thing of it is, folks, we have to recognize the limitations of honor. We're not worthy of honor. That's the attitude we need to have. If we receive honor, so be it. But we don't need to approach it as though, hey, I deserve this. I deserve this. I remember in high school, just before graduation, and they're handing out these awards. And all of us, the whole school is assembled. The whole 700 of Hackleburg High School, okay, every one of us are there. And we're assembled, and they're calling out names of my fellow classmates. And I'm thinking, wow, are they going to call my name? They're going to give me something. I hadn't done anything, okay? I had not applied for anything. I had not fulfilled anything. I had not filled out any paperwork for anything. I had not done anything. Why would I receive some sort of award? Most valuable tackle on the team. No, I was not. Never was. Smartest guy in the class. No. Guy with one blue eye, one brown eye. That would be me. I would get that one. But that wasn't one they gave out. But I'm sitting there secretly thinking, boy, I wish they'd call my name, give me something. I didn't deserve anything. I hadn't done anything. I was an average student. I did not stand out. So there I was, thinking, it'd be nice if they'd give me some honor. But I didn't deserve it. I didn't deserve it. Honor comes when it comes, but we don't need to think of ourselves as deserving honor or worthy of honor, or why didn't somebody brag on me or please me? In Luke 14, 7 through 11, Jesus told a parable of those who were invited when he noted how they chose the best places in the room. They'd come to a seat and pass that one and go to the next one, pass that one, go up to the front at the best seat. They take the honored seats in the house. And so Jesus says to the crowd, when you're invited by anyone to a wedding feast, do not sit down in the best place. By the way, who would the best place be reserved for? The bride and groom, right? You're going to go sit in the bride's seat? Boy, that'd be embarrassing. You're going to sit in the groom's seat? You shouldn't do that. Jesus says, don't sit in the best place, lest one more honorable than you be invited by him. And then he who invited you and him come and say to you, give place to this man, and you, with shame, move to a lower seat, a lower place. But when you're invited, go and sit down in the lowest place, so that when he who has invited you comes, he may say to you, friend, go up higher. Then you will have glory in the presence of those who sit at the table with you. For whoever exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted. In Romans 12, verse 3, Paul wrote, we're going to read verse 3 and verse 16. In verse 3, he said, "For I say through the grace given to me to everyone who is among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think." We're talking about the attitude of a servant here. "Do not think more highly than he ought to think, but to think soberly as God has dealt to each one a measure of faith." Verse 16, "Be of the same mind one toward another. Do not set your mind on high things, but associate with the humble. Do not be wise in your own opinion." So how do you develop the attitude of a servant? Well, you consider others before yourself. You don't consider yourself worthy of honor. And you should not think of yourself as too good for even the lowest task. You should not think that there's a task that's just too low for you to do. Jim McGuigan wrote, he was one of my favorite authors. He wrote in one of his books about having the heart of a servant, of being one who would go and into a dark room or a lonely room and wash the feet and trim the toenails of an elderly person, and no one ever knew about it. No one ever knew about it. That is the heart of a servant. And if you think of yourself as too good for any job, no matter what it is, then you have too high an opinion of yourself. Think about Naaman. Naaman was a general, okay? He was a captain of the whole army of Syria. And in 2 Kings 5, verse 11 through 13, we find that Naaman had leprosy. But how did Naaman see himself? Well, he got so angry when the prophet Elisha did not even come out to greet him and to honor him, but rather he sent out his servant to instruct this Syrian general, "Here's what you need to do to be cleansed from your leprosy. Go and dip 7 times in the River Jordan." And of course, Naaman, the Bible says Naaman expected the prophet himself to come out and greet him. And he thought Elisha would come out, call on the name of the Lord, and wave his hand, and the leprosy would be gone. So listen to what Naaman says in verse 12. "Are not Abana and Pharpar, the rivers of Damascus, better than all the waters of Israel? Could I not wash in them and be clean?" So he stormed off in a rage. Well, his servants followed him. You see, he needed to calm down and think clearly, because here his life is on the line. He needed some help to do that. So his servants followed him, and they came to him and they said, "My father, if the prophet had told you to do something great, would you not have done it? How much more then when he says to you, 'Wash and be clean'?" Verse 13. I mean, this is such a small thing. Wash and be clean. Father, do this and you'll be okay. Don't be all angry because it didn't go like you wanted it to or expected it to do, or because this is too humble a thing for you to do. Now, honestly, at the Passover, when Jesus washed the disciples' feet, you remember that, okay? When Jesus revealed the Lord's Supper, and then before he took the towel and washed their feet, what if Jesus had asked any of those disciples to wash his feet? Would they have done it? I think they would, don't you? Wouldn't you? If Jesus asked you to wash his feet, would you wash his feet? Wouldn't you? Well, sure you would. In a heartbeat. Of course you would. That is a great honor that you get to wash the feet of the Son of God. But what if Jesus, instead of taking a towel and washing their feet, what if he had turned to Peter and said, "Peter, I notice that Thomas has dirty feet here. Would you wash Thomas's feet?" You reckon Peter's eyes would get big? I mean, I'm one of your top guys. I'm the one you said you're going to give the keys to the kingdom to. You want me to wash Thomas's feet? And Jesus says, "And by the way, while you're down there, while you're at it, just go ahead and wash everybody's feet. Do you reckon Peter would have been insulted? I think he probably would. Just remember, Peter was not the mature spokesman for God at this point in his life. He was one that was ready, about to deny the Lord in just a few hours. In just a few hours, he would deny that he even knew who Jesus was. So do you honestly think he would have been willing to wash Thomas's feet, much less the rest of the guys sitting around that in that room? See, it's highly unlikely that that he would have done that. So what Jesus does, though, is it's without comparison. He takes the towel, lays aside his dress clothes, and in his undergarments, wraps this towel around himself and gets on the floor and begins to wash the feet of all of his disciples. And last he comes to Peter. That's what he did. And that was a great lesson to them on being a servant, having the attitude and the heart of a servant. Brethren, we need to be guided by this principle in everything that we do. In everything that we do. Now, so let's make sure we have the attitude of a servant. And then, number two, you need to know what is necessary for you to serve. Know what it is that you're getting into. So how we do this? Well, first of all, you just get involved. Just be there. Just show up. When we're having a work day here, the building, show up. When we're having a coat drive, show up. When we're doing food prep for somebody, we're going to take food. Just show up. Just show up. That's the start. One old preacher used to say this, just do something. Just do something. Makes sense. Makes sense. The old adage is true. The more you put into something, the more you get out of it. That makes sense, doesn't it? Now, there are some that want to serve, but they're not just sure what they can do. I mean, what can I do? Well, that's a time to ask. That's a time to seek, to open your eyes, to look for opportunities. That's what Jesus told the disciples to do as the crowd is approaching from Sychar. The woman that has gone back to the city told them all that Jesus said, and they're on their way, and the disciples have brought Jesus food, and he says, I have food to eat you don't know about, and they're thinking, did somebody bring him lunch? And Jesus says, listen, let me tell you something. The fields are white already to harvest, and I just see him pointing to that crowd approaching in the distance. The fields are white already to harvest. He says, lift up your eyes. Okay? So get involved. Get involved. Sometimes people just don't have enough genuine interest or commitment. That can be a problem. But the more involved you are with something, the more opportunities will arise for you to serve. Ecclesiastes 9:10 says, whatever your hand finds to do, do it with your might. So what do you need to do to serve? First of all, get involved. Show up. Do something. Second, help others have an opportunity to serve. Now, this is one problem that I've got. I'm not good at delegating. Some of you already know that. Henry says whenever he and Stan and I would be going visiting, Stan and I would be talking with folks, and Henry just have to sit and raise his hand in order to be able to talk. Now, poor old Henry, we feel so sorry for him, don't we? He had to raise his hand like he was in school in order to talk. Well, I mean, you know, recognize that we need to share the opportunities. We don't need to keep it all to ourselves. There are some folks who serve and want to do everything for themselves. They will not let anybody help them. They don't want anybody else to be involved. They want to do it all by themselves. We need to give someone else a chance to serve. Let them be blessed. Help them to learn what's involved in doing a good work. There's not necessarily anything wrong with doing a lot of the work that needs to be done, obviously, but we need to involve others in the work for their own good. You know, I learned a long time ago that to help a child feel good about himself and feel good about serving the Lord is you ask that child to do something for you. Hey, good buddy, would you go up front and get my Bible and bring it to me? Oh, that little guy, he'll trip and fall all over himself to get up and get that Bible and bring it to you. He's so excited to be able to do something. And that's the whole point of it. Do you remember the Lord causing a miraculous catch of fish in Luke chapter 5? They'd been in the boat, and And Jesus told them, cast down your net. And, Lord, we toiled all night. We hadn't caught anything. Well, do it. Do what I say. Do it on the other side of the boat. So they let the net down, and they caught such a catch of fish that Simon and the others signaled to their partners in the other boat, this is verses 4 through 7, to come and help them. And they came and filled both boats so that they began to sink. The Lord will bless us with opportunities to do good. We just have to be ready to take those opportunities, and we have to ask people to help us. Give them the opportunity to serve too. And finally, knowing what to do sometimes means doing things that we don't necessarily want to do. There are some dirty jobs that have to be done. There's some hard jobs that have to be done. How many love the idea of going and visiting erring Christians and trying to get them to come back to church? Isn't that the most fun thing in the world? Nobody better raise their hand, because it's not. No, Henry, you don't enjoy that. We do it, but it's not something we enjoy because it's tense. You know, we don't know what we're going to run into. You know, you don't know if they're going to be receptive or if they're going to be cold. We've been to visit people, they wouldn't even let us in the house. It's funny when the TV's on and the door's open, but nobody will come to the door. That's always a real good sign. And that we've had that happen. So, you know, it's important to recognize that sometimes we have to do the dirty jobs. Sometimes we have to do stuff that nobody else wants to do. Jesus prayed, "Father, if it is your will, take this cup away from me. Nevertheless, not my will, but yours be done." Luke 22, verse 42. So, first of all, make sure that you have the heart of a servant. Second, know what you need to do in order to serve. And then number three, and my final point this morning, and then just serve. Get on with it. Just get on with it. Don't sit and wait for it. Get on with it. Sometimes we spend so much time in preparation to do good that we never get around to doing good. And that's a big problem in the church. Sometimes it's not simply a matter of attitude or even knowledge, but a lack of action on our part that prevents us from serving like we need to. Listen to the words of James. Listen to what James has to say about this. In James chapter 1, verses 22 through 25, you know this passage. You've heard it many, many times. He says, "But be ye doers of the word and not hearers only, deceiving yourselves. For if anyone is a hearer of the word and not a doer, he is like a man observing his natural face in a mirror. For he observes himself and goes away and forgets immediately what kind of man he was. But he who looks into the perfect law of liberty and continues in it and is not a forgetful hearer but a doer of the work." See, here are several conditions. He looks into the law of liberty. He continues in it. He's not just a forgetful hearer, but he's a doer of the work. This one will be blessed in what he does. Colossians 3:23 says, "And whatever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord and not to men." And finally, James 4:17, "Therefore, to him that knows to do good and does it not, to him it is sin." So let's make it our way of life to get involved in serving the Lord by serving one another. And by making sure that we have that heart of a servant, that we're willing to help in any way we're needed to do whatever needs to be done, be it a glorious work or some grubby little task that no one will ever know about and no one will ever thank us for. To be a servant, then, we must have the attitude of a servant. We need to know what is needed in order to serve. And then we just need to serve. Lord, make me a servant. Make me like you. Jesus was a servant. Make me one too. As you consider your life and your relationship with God today, if you have a pride problem, it's time to repent. Again, you may have struggled with this for years. Keep working on it. Who overcomes a sin immediately every time? No one. There are things that we struggle with for years. Repent again. And rededicate your life to being a humble servant of God again. And if you're already one of his people, but you've not been faithful, you need to completely rededicate your life to him. To begin again. To develop that heart of a servant and get on with it. But if you never obeyed the gospel, it's time for you to become a child of God. Whatever your needs today, if there's a way we can help you, we invite and encourage you to come if you need to as we stand and as we sing.